Lou Manfredini here. Do you have cracked or sunken concrete areas around your home? Call PermaSeal for a free estimate. Don't replace it, raise it. Call 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
We should give you the rundown for the game plan. And as those of you who are regular listeners know that we adhere to the game plan.
Yes.
We never, ever veer from the game plan. Yeah. Coming up a little after 11 o'clock, Robert, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Lorizel.
Mm-hmm.
He is the author of The Uptown, Chicago's Endangered Movie Palace, a wonderful book about the legendary Uptown Theater.
It's 100 years old.
Yeah, not the book, but the theater is 100
right.
years old. So we'll talk about that. Midnight tonight, Dr. Patrick Crispin joins us, and we will solve a ton of computer problems, answer a lot of computer questions. A lot of stuff going on this week. And by the way, as we always say, don't worry about taking notes to what Patrick talks about, because all of Patrick's technology notes will magically appear on our blog. We would appreciate it if you checked it out. That is stephenjohnny.wordpress.com.
And that's Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-I-E.
As in the girl that had a birthday this week.
Mm-hmm.
And we would appreciate it if you would subscribe to our blog. No cost, absolutely free. The price is good. And no, we don't spam you. You just get an email whenever we do a new blog post.
And we don't sell your information either. It's
no.
just between the both of us. That's it. Goes
it's,
no.
It's just us.
Yeah.
Nobody else knows about it.
Goes no further than
no,
us.
Don't go any further.
By the way, can I just say, and I will do this formally on Facebook, thank you all for your wonderful birthday wishes. The hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you that chimed in.
I think that all told, with all of the various social media, you're well over 1,000 really nice
Yeah.
birthday wishes.
You're listening to the girl that was the last one chosen for the teams. They're like, she's tall, but she got two left legs. Nuh-uh. We don't want her on our volleyball team, our basketball team, our softball team. And all of a sudden, I got like hundreds and hundreds of birthday wishes. So I said to all those kids I went to grade school with, take that.
Yeah.
Take that now. See how far I've come not playing volleyball, softball, or basketball.
Sammy, were you chosen for teams when you were in school? Why can we not hear Sammy?
Sammy Martino's in tonight for Julian.
Okay, I know Sammy's. Sammy, I see his...
His mouth is
his
moving.
His lips are moving. And his lips are still moving, and we're not hearing it. Well,
and
okay.
Engineer Adam is wandering over there to find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you are.
We hear you now.
So now we understand why you weren't chosen for the teams when you were in school.
Say it one more time.
So
going
the question,
on and off.
The question is, when you were in school, were you chosen for teams when they would divvy up teams? Were you like one of the first ones they would take for the team? Or did you stand there as I did till like the last two girls are standing there and they go, okay, I guess we'll have to take her. She's tall, but yeah, we'll take her.
I was more of the middle fielder guy. So in the middle of the draft, never the top guy, never the back, but in the middle.
In the middle. Yeah, you still felt the love, right?
All the time.
Sammy is a sports guy. He's been hanging out at this radio station for 8 years now, Sammy?
This will be my 8th year.
Wow.
And we forgot that we had even met Sammy. We worked with Sammy back in the before
8 years
we were
ago.
Doing a Saturday night show when we were filling in for Lisa Dent one day.
That's right. Yeah. So you typically wear a sports hat when you're around here, right, Sammy?
That's what I do. I'm here for sports. Started off with a little programming, then went on to the sports adventure.
Are you going to be working on Monday night for the game?
I'll be working on Monday night. Hampton OB.
Yes.
Pure chaos.
And
that,
food.
That is one of the best shows in radio ever.
Do you ever feel like you should run in and like fan them because they're getting so hot? And I could just imagine OB's got these veins in his neck that are like throbbing.
I think that, what about me though? I'm in the hot seat, so
yes.
I think you guys got to bring the fan on me.
That's true. That's
my
a good
blood
point.
Pressure rises because I don't know where they're going of what they're
yes.
going to do.
Yes, yeah.
And if you've never listened to Hamp and OB, even if you could care less about football,
yes.
Hamp and OB do a wonderful show.
pure chaos.
Yeah.
It is organized chaos.
I said you also get food. Don't they bring food in for the pre and post?
They get a nice little supper for the pregame show.
Because they need to keep their energy level
yeah,
up.
Right.
Because otherwise they're normally so laid back.
Sure.
I wouldn't say they're laid back. I think from the moment you hear it when they walk in and then you're like, oh boy, here it comes.
Yep.
Well, hopefully there will be a win, so they'll be in good spirits. But it's more fun when they're angry. It is really a lot of fun when they're upset and just sputtering. That's great. That's great radio.
Win or lose, they got something to critique.
That's true. Yeah.
And Gabe is here tonight, so we will have an edition of Sports Between the Sheets coming up after the 1 o'clock news.
Mm-hmm.
And lots to talk about. Sorry that my Sox lost, but...
Hey.
They had six in a row,
and
they won the first. Well, we'll talk about this during Sports Between the Sheets. So, we got a lot coming up. We're going to do some shouts.
We are going to do that.
Let me start with some of the shout-outs. These are some of the countries that are checking out our blog, and we really appreciate you doing that. Again, you can check out our blog. Go to stevenjohnny.wordpress.com. And we have people from countries all over the planet, the United States, of course. Then this week, India, Canada, United Kingdom, Germany, Sweden, Spain, China, and Australia.
What?
Checking out our blog. So thank you to everybody who's checking us out from all over the globe.
China?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I counted. We have 15 states that have checked in tonight, and we really appreciate that. 15 states. So let me just roll through these names, and thank you all for tuning tonight. Laura and her fur baby Cotner tuned in from Willowbrook. Our buddy Pat Powers over in Iowa, extraordinary broadcaster who's been doing it for, 50 years now, right? Bonnie is in the Quad Cities. Janice is in Manuka. Sharon Malone is in Milwaukee. Margot Moore is in Albuquerque. Debbie Tusick is out in Sandwich, Illinois. Mark Orr in Rockford. Carrie Johnson's in Palm Coast, Florida. Susan Powell is listening in Memphis.
Memphis. Thank you very much.
Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia. Judy B. is in Oaklawn. Eric Baum is listening in Wells Beach, Maine. And as always, he posts a lovely picture of his part of the world. Nancy Tomaszewski is in West Allis, Wisconsin. John Couture is in Warren, Michigan. Gail Maslin is listening in her cozy cottage in Lake City, Michigan. She and her sisters are celebrating their 29th annual sisters trip.
How cool.
I want some sisters so I can just go hang out in a cabin in Lake City, Michigan. So they're by the fireplace, and I'm sure they got a glass of wine and maybe some fondue.
Do you know what this is reminding me of?
What?
The last conversation we had with Bert Telstrom.
Oh, because he was in Michigan, cottage.
He was, it was the last time he was going to be in that cottage, because this is Bert Telstrom, who, those of you who are longtime listeners and longtime Chicagoans, Bert Telstrom, the man behind Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, he moved from Michigan out to California, but it was the last conversation, and he was kind of wistful, and some night we should dig that up, because it was a really interesting sort of career-spanning conversation.
Right, he was sitting by the fireplace. It was quite wonderful. But you kept talking, and look at this list I've got here. I did it in longhand tonight. So my new eyes could hush, okay? Over there. Okay. Nancy Hollins is listening in Northbrook. Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida. Chuck Snitchler, our buddy in Hobart, best friend of this radio show and this radio station. Nancy Witt is in Milwaukee. Roger Camp is in Shade, Ohio. Peter Jakubowicz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Marie Prudence is in Evergreen Park. Bonnie Pearson and her pup, Lola, are listening in Grays Lake. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory. Every Saturday night. Diane Vasquez is our graphics guru. And thank you, Diane, for your adorable... Feels like autumn. It's right around the corner. Graphic tonight. Bobby Danos. He's out in the land of the Sandwich Fair, which is going on this weekend. The last of the county fairs in Illinois for the year. He's in the Sandwich Manor. Thank you for listening, Bobby. Bonnie Pearson is listening. Nancy Nosek's in South Holland. Beverly Goodall. Ooh, later on, we got to give a special shout out to Beverly Goodall because Beverly adopted a goat for us.
And we have pictures.
Yes. In Door County, Beverly adopted a goat.
It is so cool.
Yes, for us, with our names on the certificate.
So we got to post the picture on our Facebook page. We'll do that later.
Brian Lefevre's in Bridgeport, home of the Romova Theater, where it's hopping tonight. DJ Mochi is performing there. John Bonadonna, I just love that name, along with the Bing Besh, John Bonadonna.
We got to get them together in a group.
The Bonadonna and the Besh. Greg Borgman is in Chicago. Cindy Radiger is in Chesterton. Diane Filiar is in Round Lake Beach. Gene Jacobson's in Milwaukee. Michelle Fairfield in Peoria. Alan Maria in Marengo. Gloria Hickey in Lombard. Fred Husar in Lyons. Mark Schroeder in Neenah, Wisconsin. Luis Olivo is in Cicero. Janet Gellert's in Gainesville, Florida. Carrie Hunt in Ruskin, Florida. Sherry and Bob in Arlington Heights. George Clements in Augusta, Georgia. David Schwein is in Mount Prospect, a SEN graduate. Dean's in Indianapolis. Scott Cooper is in Naperville. Stacy Drager is in Algonquin. Lovely Algonquin. We just spent some time out there. Bing Besh is in Winfield. Bonnie is in Butternut, Wisconsin. Bonnie and George are in Elgin. Marty's in Davenport, Iowa. Brian Blair is in Tellico Village, Tennessee. And Mike Ski is in Elmwood Park, and I got them all. Whew. If I missed you, I'll get you next week. I promise.
Boy, Chicago has had some wonderful theaters, and we're going to talk about one of them tonight.
The one that I love because I grew up knowing this theater is the Uptown Theater at 4816 North Broadway. We live there. I could walk to the Uptown Theater, and some of my fondest memories were going to the Uptown Theater. There's a brand new book called The Uptown, Chicago's Endangered Movie Palace. And the author is with us in the studio. He's Robert Lorzel. And Robert, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on the book.
Thanks.
It's beautiful. And I got to ask you, how long did it take you to put the book together?
It was actually a fairly quick turnaround. My co-author, Andy Pierce, who wrote the introduction, talked with me in the last summer, so it was like summer of 2024, that we realized the 100th anniversary of this building was coming up really fast.
Yeah.
So I had already done research on the theater and the neighborhood, so I didn't have to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also wrote a book about walking Chicago, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the main work on the book was about a year.
Really?
Yeah.
The and you mentioned your the gentleman who wrote the open. He is also the founder of the Friends of the Uptown, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And the whole idea about being Friends of the Uptown in the book is to try to generate some interest so that it doesn't end up being another shopping center or high rise. Hopefully, the building can eventually be saved.
Yes, and one of the basic facts about this is that, you know, the building is now 100 years old, but it has been closed to the public since December 1981, almost 44 years.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, not quite half of its existence, but close to it. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of been in limbo for a long time.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a lot about the book and the history of the Uptown Theater, but let me cut to the chase for the moment. What do we know at the moment about what is happening? Because it's been rumored, yeah, they're going to rehabilitate it, yada, yada, yada. Our friend Jerry Mickelson is involved with this. What do you know about the current state of what's happening with the Uptown?
Yeah, well, there have been many plans and announcements that got people excited.
Yes.
I mean, back in 2018, when Rahm Emanuel was the mayor, he announced a plan to reopen the theater, and it just did not come together. Then the COVID pandemic hit, which kind of stalled things. But Jerry Mickelson, he's owned the building since 2008, and he says he's very determined to get it opened again. He is talking with the city of Chicago about things like TIF funding, tax increment financing. So, You know, he says now that his plan to reopen the building would cost $190 million.
Oh, my gosh.
That doesn't surprise me.
It does me, because they didn't they buy it for $3.2 million?
Yeah. And Whoa. And back in 2018, they said they were going to be able to do it for $75
million. Whoa.
So it's become more of
in less than 10
bigger
years.
Plan. I mean, some of that's inflation, yeah. but there's also – I mean, I think there are questions about – how elaborate do you want to make yeah. the renovations?
Do we want it to be exact?
Do you want everything to look nice and shiny, kind of like it did in 1925 when it opened? Mm-hmm. Or is it okay that there are corners of the building where the plaster's a little rough or whatever? There are a lot of theaters that still have – like if you go to yeah. Tholey Hall in Pilsen where they, yeah. they reopened that after many years and it still has – there are parts on the wall where it's like they could repaint mm-hmm. that or whatever, but they, I think they kind of like the a bit of decay. It gives it some age, but I think the $190 million plan is probably trying to get it very polished. And
yeah,
everything.
That'd be a lot like the Aurora, the Paramount Arts Center in Aurora, because they did it exactly the way it had been. Yeah. When it opened.
Or like Johnny and I have a mixed marriage, North Side girl, South Side guy.
Yeah.
And my favorite theater when I was growing up, with I'm sure you know it, the Avalon Theater.
Yeah.
Again, a classic theater. And the Avalon was kind of the biggest of that kind of theaters on the South Side. The Uptown was probably the biggest of that kind of theater on the North Side.
It was the biggest in the city. And yeah. it still is. I mean, it's not being used, but in terms of theaters in the city of Chicago, if you count the number of seats in them, it's the yeah. biggest.
Now, in putting the book together, you had to go inside the theater
yeah.
a couple of times.
Yeah.
Were there rats and mold and squishy carpet? And
I didn't see any rats.
Good. Did it
there are some places. I mean, basically, I think the building is in good shape in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, the structure of it looks pretty solid. I'm not an engineer. Mm-hmm.
But you weren't shocked by how bad it was inside.
No, not at all. And you can still see the grandeur of the architecture mm-hmm. and a lot of the decor. But there are places with damage that need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. In particular, soon after it closed in 1981, the owners of that time basically did not care about the building,
right.
from what I can tell.
I remember that.
And they did not have the heating on during the winter. And so there were a bunch of pipes that drain water from
yes.
the roof. When rain and snow would hit
melted.
The roof of the building, it goes down these pipes through the building down into the basement to drain out. And those pipes burst.
Mm.
So there was water. People
I think
talked about like ice all over the place. And so there's still damage from that incident in
yeah.
the early 80s that needs to be fixed now.
I think I remember that. That's why I said mold and mushy carpet, because that was a big story. Like, why would you do that? And unless you were planning on just raising the whole building and just, you know,
yeah.
forget about it.
Yeah. So there are places. I mean, there's like a corner of the auditorium where you look over there and you can see like, oh, here's a spot where the wall has broken open
mm-hmm.
and it just needs to be covered up and the pipes. They put new pipes in, so
yeah.
there's no imminent danger of that happening again.
You didn't feel like the ceiling was going to fall on you when you were... Because the ceilings are massive. They're
yeah.
just like so... It's like being in a castle when you're inside.
Right.
That was my recollection.
That was the concept that the
yeah.
architects, Rapp and Rapp, and Rapp and Rapp designed the Chicago Theater
mm-hmm.
and several of the other theaters, mm-hmm. like the Oriental Theater, which is now the Nederlander. And their concept was that any person who could afford a movie ticket, and the tickets were all the same price, so anywhere in the theater, you know, there was no VIP seats or whatever.
Right.
The average person who has just an everyday job could buy a movie ticket and walk in, and they would feel like they were in a palace or a castle
yeah.
in old Europe, and they would see all these gargoyles on the wall
yeah.
and paintings,
cornices,
sculptures, and things
yeah,
like that.
Gold
yeah, yeah.
And sparkle, and a massive staircase that went down to the basement
yeah.
to the restrooms, and you could just spend some time in the restroom, because in the ladies' room there were sofas, and it was just unbelievable.
And little notepads.
Yes. Yeah. Your brother reminded us back in the day, theaters would have a writing desk.
Yeah.
So if you were compelled to write a letter while you're, you know, watching a movie, run downstairs to the writing desk to write about your experience there.
What was your strongest feel the first time you walked in? What did you feel strongest? Was it, boy, this is a dump, this needs to be fixed, or wow, this must have been extraordinary when it was new? What did you first feel?
It was that sense of how extraordinary it had been and still is, really. I mean, it's not the same experience, obviously, as it was when you walked in 1925. And just for a little background here, you know, I live in the neighborhood. I've been there 19 years, almost 20 years. So, you know, I've walked past this building many times and just kind of wonder what it was like inside. And I hope with the photos in our book...
they are wonderful.
We have photos both of what it looked like when it opened and what it's looked like in more recent years. So the book can give people a peek inside the building, you know. So that's one way you can see what it looks like inside. But even that's like, you know, you really...
Until you walk in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we take a break, the theater, the Uptown Theater, would seat 4,000?
It was 4,320 seats when it opened, and they added a few and they did some renovations at
one
point.
That's amazing. When you, because now, you know, we think about like an arena where you go for a concert. Yeah. But when you're talking about a movie theater,
well, just
on
imagine,
a Saturday afternoon, you could get 4,000 people in there.
Yeah, and for multiple showings. I mean, you have like five or six movies a day.
With color cartoons.
Yeah. Yes, and intermissions on the long movies.
Right, but just imagine, like, today, if you built a movie theater with 4,300 seats in it, when would you ever come close to filling it?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be a special event, like George Lucas is going to be there with a Star Wars screening something. And people might show up for something like that and buy, you know, 4,000 tickets.
We have with us in the studio Robert Lorizel. He is the author of this gorgeous book on the Uptown Theater. It's entitled The Uptown, Chicago's Endangered Movie Palace. And you can check it out at cityfiles.com. Let's go back to 1925.
Yeah.
When it opened, the anticipation was so great that how many people were there for the opening of the theater?
Well, the Chamber of Commerce group for the Uptown neighborhood held a big six-day festival on the streets around there.
Now, what month would this have been in 25?
In August.
In August. Perfect.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So the estimates of how many people came out for this festival were as high as 750,000 people over the 6 days, of which, you know, tens of thousands went into the, maybe, I think one estimate was 150,000 people went inside the theater. I mean, that's probably, I don't know if the Uptown neighborhood has ever had that many people in it.
Yeah.
Any other point in history.
Yeah.
And it's just for some context there, Uptown was one of a few neighborhoods around the city that were kind of springing up around that time period. The city had really been focused on, like, you know, theaters and department stores and things like that were all downtown. But now you had these sort of mini downtowns popping up in places like the corner of Broadway and Lawrence. So people around there could go to a department store.
Like a Goldblatt's.
Exactly. You could go into see movies and things there.
You didn't have to leave your neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
And and in those days, a lot of people didn't.
That's true, yeah.
It was a major thing for a lot of people from whatever neighborhood to come to downtown Chicago because they had their own downtown.
And from uptown, you just got on the number 36 CTA bus and would take you right downtown.
Well, they didn't call that back in 1925.
But it became the number 36, yes.
But they had the L line, you know.
Sure.
In fact, that opened in 1900, and it originally went to Wilson. Wilson was like the end of the line.
What?
And that
those
was...
Those people north of Wilson?
Well, eventually it got extended.
All the way to Evanston?
You know? Yeah.
What was the first film in the Uptown Theater?
The Lady Who Lied, which is, you know, a very obscure movie that no one remembers today, and you can't even find a copy of it.
Lady
But, you know, the reviews, like the Tribune's critics said the movie was not that great or whatever, but you know, people were there to see the theater.
Yes, the experience.
Yeah.
The jazz singer played there.
No, the jazz singer didn't play
there. He didn't play there.
So when the Uptown Theater opened in 1925, it's silent movies, mm-hmm. and you had an orchestra pit.
Right, orchestra, an organ.
Yeah, an organ, a huge Wurlitzer organ. And so the orchestra and mm-hmm. or the organist would play during the movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
But in 1927, the jazz singer opens at another theater downtown. And it took about a year for the Uptown to catch up because it didn't even have wiring for speakers.
Mm-hmm.
They actually brought in, there was an actor whose name I'm forgetting right now, but the guy who originated the role of the jazz singer but decided not to be in the movie and gave the role to Al Jolson instead.
Uh-huh.
So this other actor, I think his name was George Jessel, he appears in person at the Uptown Theater. Okay. So it's kind of like, well, we can't get the jazz singer movie, we'll get this actor in. So then by the end of 1928, they finally do get sound movies,
yeah.
and that kind of changes everything. They still have an orchestra pit, but they don't need an orchestra to be playing during the movies mm-hmm. anymore.
Again, to put it in context, at that time, for them to add the electronics to do sound, would it have been the equivalent of the theaters we heard of today that are adding digital sound?
Sure.
I mean, that expensive, that big of a proposition to make that change.
Right, because the theater was designed with great acoustics where you don't need electronic speakers.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
When it first opened.
Right.
In fact, because some of the live performances they would have would be people just singing, not
yep.
using
yep.
microphone, but and the acoustics
That's
were
amazing.
Good enough that
yep.
you could hear
exactly.
them throughout the theater.
Yeah.
So radio was starting to become very, very popular, and people had a radio in their home, and that was a form of entertainment. Was that putting theaters like the Uptown in jeopardy?
Well, that's a good question, but the Uptown, when it opened, and this only lasted a few years, they had a radio station in the theater, and it was affiliated with the Edgewater Beach Hotel, W-E-B-H, and so they had a little studio in the theater, and they would do live broadcasts of the portions of not the silent movie. It doesn't make any sense
yeah.
to like broadcast a silent movie over the radio, but they would have the whole show included some comedy routines, song and dance, the orchestra playing, a jazz group playing, and then the movie. So
wow.
they would broadcast that out and tell people like, here's what you'd be hearing or seeing if you were at the
here.
Uptown Theater tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know this. I don't know the answer to this, so I will throw it out. Is it possible that WGN was
yes.
affiliated with that? Because I know WGN Radio was affiliated with the
Edgewater Beach Hotel radio
yeah. station. So I wonder if there is a tie-in there.
I bet so, because this radio station is looking at a similar anniversary. So
we just passed 100 years.
100 years.
There were a lot of changes in the call letters of stations
yes.
and licensing, so
right.
it's kind of, I think it's a sort of complicated story of like which stations
mm-hmm.
became
which. I'm going to claim it was ours.
it was us.
It was ours.
We
yeah.
did
and
it.
Balaban and Katz owned that theater
yes,
at that time,
that's right?
right?
Yeah.
They're the ones that opened it 100 years ago?
That's correct.
Okay.
Did they have any of the big bands of the time performing there?
There were various bands like that played there at different
yeah.
times.
Because if they weren't playing Chicago, then they had a nice place on the north side they could go to, the
yeah.
Uptown
yeah.
on Broadway.
Yeah. Well, so you had like Duke Ellington played there
right.
in
mm-hmm.
1931 was one of the more notable ones that I thought was kind of remarkable.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the acts that have performed there, and a lot of our listeners will know these names. I remembered a lot of them. I experienced some pretty cool celebrity experiences at the Uptown Theater in the 60s, but the last band to perform?
Yeah, that was December 19th, 1981, a concert by the Jay Giles Band at the Uptown Theater, and that was the last public event in the building.
And they were huge because this song, Centerfold,
yeah.
came out that year,
yeah.
so
right,
that
right.
was a very big deal.
Yeah. And so it was. That was the stage at which the owners of the building at that point were just having trouble keeping up.
Yeah.
expenses of maintaining this huge
place. It was just falling apart around them.
So from what I've heard, you know, the building was not very well heated that night. It's in the middle of December, and it's kind of a cold room, and the bathrooms are in really bad shape.
You see your breath in the bathroom.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was at least one review of the concert that says, you know, it was a really great show,
but
you know, things were not looking good in the theater.
Yeah. Other big names that played there, the Grateful Dead.
The Grateful Dead played there more than anyone else, 17 times. And this was the era from 1975 till 1981, Jam Productions put on rock concerts there.
Right.
While the theater still continued showing movies, but, you know, a few times a month or whatever, there would be some concerts there.
I think I saw the Dead there, but because it was the Grateful Dead, I'm not sure.
I'm
really. Prince performed there?
Yeah, it was his first time performing in Chicago.
That's amazing.
He was at the Uptown Theater as the opening act for Rick James.
Oh.
And all the reviews said that this new guy sort of stole the show. Everyone was so bowled over by the opening act. And then he came back less than a year later, headlining, and again, you know, really got rave reviews.
How about Springsteen?
Springsteen was there a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And, I found people who commented about how seeing Bruce Springsteen at the Uptown Theater was what really made them into Springsteen fanatics. You know, like they had never seen anything
so
like
intimate.
This before.
Yeah. Even though your 4,000 people could be there, it still felt intimate.
Yeah, exactly.
And with really good acoustics. Okay, personally, my experiences, and I'd love to get some documentation on this, but I was there. I know what happened. I went to see the Nutty Professor at the Uptown Theater on a Saturday afternoon, and at the intermission, the house lights are up, and on stage they roll out a large mirror. And behind the mirror was Jerry Lewis wearing a white cowboy suit with guns on his hip. And he stepped out and he stood in front of that large mirror and he did like a gun routine. I'm sure it was really Jerry Lewis. Sure.
You know, I
how
I
close
have,
was this to the Grateful Dead concert?
It was quite a distance between.
I haven't heard this story, so that's a new one on me. But there are stories about, you know, like Sonny and Cher.
I saw that. I was there.
Appeared at the theater. The Dave Clark Five, which were a British invasion band.
Saw that.
Those were weekends where they would, like the Dave Clark Five, I think I looked in the paper, they appeared at like 12 different theaters in Chicago over the course of like 2 days.
I saw Five with Hermits at the Century.
Yeah.
And my mother was going to take me to the Uptown, but because it was so chaotic at the Century, she was afraid to go to the Uptown. Because, I mean, it was insane. There were girls hanging from the balcony, because they were just so overcome by the experience of the Hermits and
wasn't Sonny and Cher, wasn't that
their movie
along with their movie, I think it was called Good Times,
and like the Jerry Lewis movie, the movie stopped for an intermission and we're all just talking about the movie and out comes Sonny and Cher, and it was during that period where he was wearing the fur vest, and they were like you imagine Sonny and Cher were back in
so
the 60s.
This was an era when theaters, old theaters like the Uptown, seemed kind of like dinosaurs or relics, but they were trying to find ways of competing with television.
Yes.
So one thing they did was they had, you know, like pay-per-view kind of closed-circuit TV things.
Right.
So they had boxing matches. So they sold out when Sonny Liston was fighting Cassius Clay, who soon became Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see that on TV at home.
That's true.
You had to go out to a movie theater and pay, you know, buy a ticket to see it there. And so that was one of the ways they came up with competing.
Well, you talk about competing. Isn't that one of the additional problems that the Uptown Theater faces now? Because there are a lot of people who, if they're going to go to a concert, they're either going to go to a smaller, intimate venue or they're going to go to the United Center to see whoever. And as far as movies, movie theaters are not doing that well right now because everybody's saying, I can get this on demand.
Yeah,
why do I want to go to... So There's that question of who would the audience be for this refurbished Uptown Theater.
You are not the only person to voice skepticism about this. I've heard others say the same thing. Jerry Michelson, the owner, seems pretty confident that he can make it work. I think it would all work out if it did if this place ever does reopen. So just across the street, you've got the Riviera Theater, which is a couple thousand, 3,000 seats or seating capacity. You could basically, if there's a band that sells out two nights at the Riviera, that same band could play at the Uptown.
You're right.
It would be artists of the sort that perform at the Chicago Theater. Could also perform at the Uptown.
That's true.
They're comparable. But, you know, does it make sense to have a theater like that in the Uptown neighborhood instead of downtown?
So would the projection be that it would be mostly a live music venue as opposed to a movie theater or all of the above?
Yes. Or what? I don't think there's much in the way of plans to do movies there. It would probably be more like the Chicago Theater or something like that, where you have concerts, you have comedians as well as rock bands. You might occasionally have a touring Broadway show kind of thing that, that could go in there. But I think it would primarily be live music. But the other thing to note is that this theater has huge spaces in the lobbies and the foyers. And I think
even bigger than the Chicago Theater.
Oh, yeah. It was designed to have 4,000 people watching a movie with space for another 3,000 or 4,000 people standing in the lobby waiting for the next show.
No.
And so the 4,000 people in the theater would go out onto Lawrence Avenue and Magnolia.
Like the side doors.
The sides.
Oh, my gosh.
While people were coming in off Broadway, so the two crowds would not have to cross each other.
That's amazing.
Really ingenious design.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, there's all kinds of spaces in the building, which I think you could use today for special events. You could have weddings there, art exhibits, dance shows, maybe a play that's not on the main stage, but somewhere else in the building. I just think there's all kinds of things you could do in there.
You could have a bar in that lobby, like they have at the Chicago Theater, which is so cramped. But that could be like a little sit-down corner of the lobby of the Uptown Theater.
Robert, the book is a beautiful book, really extraordinarily well done. But I'm curious. There are so many aspects to this legendary theater. As you were putting the book together, was there any part of it that you thought, okay, I really got to stop, but I could go on forever about blah, 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 blah?
Oh, there were lots of things like that. I have a tendency to go down rabbit holes, as they say, to use a cliche of research and, you know, the history of the neighborhood, the history of Balaban and Katz. And, I think Balaban and Katz is sort of the story of the movie business for, you know, a good chunk of the 20th century. And I don't know that story has been told as well as it could be. I mean, that could be like a Netflix series or something, you know. And you lived in the Uptown neighborhood, so you're familiar with – I mean, I heard all these stories about how people use – some bad words to describe the neighborhood's reputation by the time to the 60s.
It was called Hillbilly Heaven in the early 60s because there was this just an influx of Southerners who came for work.
Right. But one of the things I find remarkable is that even when the neighborhood became poor, when it had problems with crime and things like that, it still had these entertainment venues.
Yeah.
They stayed open pretty much the whole time through, you know, I think the Aragon Ballroom closed for a few years, but then it reopened as a rock venue, and the Riviera was always there.
And ironically, like the song said, I don't care how poor you were, if you're going to the theater, you got dressed up.
Yeah.
You got dressed up to go to this gorgeous, palace that you're going to spend a couple of hours in.
Right. So I got the sense that people who lived in the neighborhood must have felt like this was a really special theater to have in their midst.
Yes.
You know, despite all the problems they faced.
Absolutely.
They still had this magnificent building where they could go see movies or see.
It was a gem.
See Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis. In fact, a listener from Tinley Park sent me a copy of an ad for Jerry Lewis, 1963, performing at like a dozen theaters in Chicago.
Okay.
He actually found the ad.
Oh, I love this.
So it's so cool. So there was Jerry Lewis with the Nutty Professor, 1963, and I'm not crazy. Well, maybe, but not on that particular story.
But this is weird. It says, a month after its national release, Jerry Lewis was boosting the box office of The Nutty Professor starting on July 12, 1963, with appearances at 12 Chicago theaters over a three-day period.
Yeah. Yeah, this is similar to what I said about the Dave Clark Five and Sonny Cher kind of did the same
like
sort of
circuit.
Thing.
Yeah. All right. We talked about some of the names like Prince and Bruce Springsteen and the Grateful Dead many, many times there. A listener from 708 area code said Rod Stewart back in 79-80, I believe, the Uptown Theater. Am I right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
In fact, he had the stage painted red.
Oh, really? Do we know why?
That was the color he wanted for his show.
Well, speaking of red, another listener said, I have such great memories of going in that place. It was just all red and gold.
Yeah.
And that's why it was so regal. I can picture the carpet, that red plush carpet.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And the gold cornices and... Okay.
Another from a 414 area code, did any of your older theaters use photo players in the orchestra pits?
There are YouTube videos of photo players, spelled F-O-T-O players. I've never heard of that.
I'm not. That sounds familiar, but I don't want to misspeak. I'm not sure.
We have to look into that because that's a new one.
They did have in the orchestra pit. The one controversial thing was that the conductor had a little dial that he could use to change the speed of the film,
what?
Make it like faster or slower. And this is, you know, the silent movie era. And there's Balaban and Katz's employee manual that's basically discouraging them from like changing the speed of the film. And
did you see the Bruce Springsteen poster?
Yeah. Went to see Springsteen in the late 70s when he played Rosalita. The balcony was bouncing so much.
Dust was raining down. I thought it was about to collapse.
You know, this has come up. I've heard other people tell these stories, and it comes up in the book. The balcony at the Uptown Theater has no columns holding it up, and it's designed to sway.
Whoa.
But, you know, I don't think when it was built in 1925 that they anticipated rock music fans jumping up and down.
Oh, my God.
I asked Jerry Michelson about this, and he said they had engineers look at it, and they said it's fine. But he says, you know, before they reopen, they'll take another look at that.
An 847 area code said, did the Uptown Theater have an organ? It did.
Yeah, a big Wurlitzer organ.
But it was the 60s when they...
Early 1960s, it was removed. And by that point, it really hadn't been used very much at all.
Do we know where it went?
It was divided up. It went for a while to a theater in Northwest Indiana. And then the console, which is just the portion of it that has the keyboard, not the pipes and all that, ended up at a theater in California where it was.
Yeah.
That didn't go to Pipes and Pizza, did it?
No. Pipes and Pizza, which was a pizza place on the South Side, I think they had another major, like a South Side Theater's organ. Was moved there.
Yeah, but, Pipes and Pizza was in Lansing?
Lansing. That sounds right. Yeah.
Another interesting, saw ELO in 1977, three nights in a row. And I'm wondering, was this the same time that you were working as a waitress
and I was their waitress?
You were with ELO.
Because they were staying at the Holiday Inn where we used to have a rotating restaurant, the Pinnacle, on the top of it, and I was a waitress there, and I kept it under wraps. I didn't tell anybody that ELO was staying there. And I got great tips. I didn't get any tickets to any of those shows.
Oh, that's okay.
But this listener says, this is Ken, he says, three nights in a row as an Andy Frayn usher. And the ushers, was a big deal to be an usher. And then the Marshall Tucker Band as well for two nights. That's some good music you saw there. Yeah. Another listener said, I got my book already. And this is Dean in Indianapolis. And we should mention, you can go to cityfilespress.com to get a copy of the book. Again, that's a wonderful publishing company, too. You'll be blown away by the great books that they're offering there.
And the quality and the pictures.
Yeah.
Just extraordinary stuff.
You are going to be talking with James Pierce about the Uptown Theater at the Harold Washington Library, right?
Yes, Saturday, September 13th.
So next
Saturday.
We are
doing it at noon and 2 p.m. And those programs, they take registrations online, and they're just about full. So
that's great.
I think I hate to tell people don't show up because all the seats are full, but maybe there'll be some no-shows. I think you can get on a wait list.
Well, they should do the way the Uptown did and let the people stand out in the lobby.
Yeah, we don't have 4,000 seats, unfortunately.
Oh, so many people remember just how regal it was and wonderful memories attached to the theater. So we'll keep our fingers and toes crossed now that we're looking at the 100th anniversary that, in fact, there will be life in the theater.
Yeah. I just think it's a shame for this building to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
It was the city council in the 1990s decreed it a landmark.
Right.
So if that that law stays in place, it's not supposed to be torn down or radically altered because this building is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sitting there not really being used for anything. So, you know, it should be put to some use.
Listener wants to know, will your book be available to purchase? Apparently she's on the list to see you next Saturday.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Great. All right. So the book will be available for purchase there. If you can't get there or if it's all filled up, cityfilespress.com. Robert, is there some place where you might be popping up so people can follow you personally?
I have my own personal website, which is my name, Robert Loerzel, Loerzel, .com. And so one of the things I have in there is a page called Events that lists upcoming events and other assorted things.
Well, I'm so glad you could spend some time with us tonight because we were tickled when we heard about the book.
And we will have links to your site, to the Uptown Press, or City Press.
City Files Press.
CityFilesPress.com.
We'll have links to all those pages on all of our social media sites. We are going to talk about AI, artificial intelligence, and a whole lot of other technical stuff as we bring in the man who is the Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. That would be your Dr. Patrick Crispin. Hey, Patrick.
Woohoo! How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am hot. It's like really hot in California. I don't understand it. It's got like 90 degrees today. Like,
what?
Yeah. I mean, well, September is usually our hottest month of the year. So,
really?
But it's like, come on. This is ridiculous.
And here we're talking about being in the 40s tonight.
Yeah.
It feels, it smells autumnal. So it feels like you want to have apples and apple cider. And
today the high was probably in the 60s. It's going to be a little warmer tomorrow.
But,
so that's reason for you to fly back to Chicago.
That's right.
We're on our way.
Okay. We got a lot of ground to cover tonight. Should we start with the Google story that we talked about a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, there was actually a story that came out actually since we were last on the air.
Mm-hmm.
There was this headline that everybody was talking about saying, quote, Google issues warning to 2.5 billion Gmail users, change your passwords right now. Oh, my Lord, it's the end of the world. You've got to do it. And everybody picked this story up. It was all the local newscasts were covering it. I saw it in Forbes.
I read it Newsweek.
Newsweek?
Yeah.
But Patrick, the thing that I loved was as you responded to me as I had sent you the story and you said, have you received any warning from Google? And I said, no.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it was the newscasts were covering this, but nobody in the tech world was covering this. And the news article was saying, Google's warning everybody. And I was going, well, I've got three Google accounts. Let me yep. log into those accounts. And I didn't get a message, and nobody I knew did, and nobody in the tech industry did. And it turns out the story completely and totally false. Google was not breached. In fact, September 1st, Google had to release an official denial. And this is a quote. Several inaccurate claims surfaced recently that incorrectly stated that we issued a broad warning to all Gmail users about a major Gmail security issue. This is entirely false. It was a made-up story. Google also went on to say that they're really, really good at taking care of phishing and malware, and they automatically block 99.9% of phishing and malware attempts. So the story that was going around, what was going on, and we talked a little bit about this the last time I was on the air, was there was an incident that happened in June where bad people, threat actors, went into SalesLoft, and SalesLoft is sort of a Salesforce interaction before it, and they stole some OAuth tokens, and I'm talking a whole bunch of words that nobody's going to understand. Basically, Google removed the tokens, disabled the integration, notified the affected users. No Gmail credentials were compromised. It was a small number of users. So Gmail, absolutely, completely not breached. But you don't need to change your password.
If that is the root of this story getting legs, that was 2 months before the story broke.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Has anybody determined who was behind this? And was this just an attempt to embarrass Google, to freak out the public? I mean, or should we just say, well, you know, it's life today. Move on.
I have a theory. I don't have anything to back up this theory. And I shared it with Steve. And the theory is, there is this guy at Forbes who has been trying to make this a story for over a year.
Yeah.
And there are stories after stories that show up at Forbes that say, oh my Lord, 2.5 billion accounts have been hacked. And Google says, no, they haven't. And then a couple months later, 2.5 billion accounts have been hacked. And Google says, mm-mm, no, they haven't. And it just constantly, it's the same story. I can share with you the links. It's kind of funny what they're doing. And I think this was just one of those times where everybody said, oh no, 2.5 billion accounts have been hacked.
Wow.
I just like, no, they haven't. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay, but the time may come when something like that happens, so we as Google users should be practicing safe Googling?
Yeah, basically, if you have two-factor authentication turned on, and preferably through the Google Authenticator app, or passkeys, which is are much better than just text messages, it's a much more secure alternative. Google also has a security checkup you can go through to review your device's apps and app permissions. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Bottom line here, don't worry about this. This was just a complete made-up story. Don't trust these things from the local news when it comes to this.
And whatever you
when
do,
when it comes to the tech industry,
don't read tech in Forbes. Just move on to other sources before you read it in Forbes. Shame. Can I hold you on a jargon alert? Pass keys.
Yeah, it's basically you have, and I know you at your home you have a MacBook, mm-hmm, and some people have Windows with Windows Hello on it. And what it does is it actually uses biometrics and sort of a code that's stored on your device that is specific for that device. And instead of using a password, you're doing a cryptographic pass key that is then tied into either Windows Hello, which is going to be your picture, or Touch ID, which is in the top right-hand corner on your Apple keyboard. So it's a better way than doing passwords. I've got a link I'll put in the show notes to where you can find out about pass keys. It really is the new future for passwords. I think we're going to be getting rid of passwords in the future. We talked about this on the air in the past, but honestly, pass keys, I think there's future.
And for those of you that are kind of glazing over with everything we're talking about, don't worry about it. Don't try to write this stuff down. All of the stuff that Patrick is talking about tonight will magically appear on the Steve and Johnny blog. Patrick, let's turn our attention to some of the people that are sending us messages about some virus messages that they're receiving in Facebook.
Yeah,
a listener sent in a text message saying, when I open a link in Facebook and I'm told it's a virus, is it true or is it a scam? And I want you to listen very carefully because this is a really important rule of thumb. If you're on a website, you're on Facebook or wherever, and your browser says you have a virus, it's a scam. If your antivirus says it, it's real. Mm-hmm. But if you're on Facebook or any other web page and you click on a link and you get a pop-up message saying your device is infected, download this app, that's always a fake. Facebook, Google, Apple, Microsoft, none of them are going to pop up a virus alert in your browser or tell you to install random software. Your browser might put up, if you're using Chrome or Edge or Safari, it might say, you know, you're trying to do something unsafe here and I'm going to block you from doing it, but don't scan your hard drive, which is how you would know you would have a virus. So only a real antivirus program is going to tell you that you have a virus, something like Windows Defender, Malwarebytes, Norton, so on. What happens is this fake pop-up message is really designed to look truly official. It looks like it comes from Windows or Apple or Facebook, and it's designed to scare you. Mm-hmm. The scammers are sitting there going, oh no, I want you to do this. And they're going to tell you, okay, what you have to do is you have to download this tool to fix it. Or worse still, hey, call this 800 number and we'll go and fix your computer for you, or remotely access your computer and install it. And fix it and then hit you for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Here's what you need to do if you ever get a message like that. Close the tab. Just close the browser tab immediately. Don't click OK. Don't click install. It's fake. You can, if you want to, clear your browser history. Then if you really are concerned, open up your real antivirus program, Microsoft Defender or whatever you're using, and just scan your computer. But don't panic. A web page, even Facebook, can't diagnose a virus on your computer. Only your antivirus can. So if you got a message that says you got a virus and it's coming from your browser, it's fake. It's always fake.
And the only kind of thing that I've ever message that I've gotten from a browser trying to go to a website is, oops, this ain't a good place. You might want to get away from here.
Yeah, it'll pop up and say, for example, you try to go to an HTTP site and it's going to force you to say, you know, this page isn't secure. I'm not going to let you get there.
Right.
No. Well, so it's not going to say you have a virus.
Now is that the same on desktop, laptop, and phone?
Yeah.
But you said don't panic. I got to tell you, when I'm holding my phone, and this has happened to me a couple of times, and that link on Facebook starts flashing with a big old red exclamation point, I back
always
out of
fake.
It real quick, and I turn
always
my phone
fake.
Off. But I turn my phone off because it freaks me out because it's flashing. Ah! And it's hard to stay calm.
And that's by design because they want to get you into this frenzy where, I have to do something now. I have to do
I have to install this software, and the software is going to be malware or an information stealer for you. Or I've got to call this 800 number in India, and then they're going to ask me for my credit card, and then they're going to get access to my computer or my phone. And no. It's fake. Don't fall for it.
Okay, I want to interject because we're talking about being safe. A listener from a 319 area code says, Patrick, some financial institutions are now offering voice of verification instead of asking the name of, for example, your first pet to access your accounts. In the new world of AI, if the bad guys can find my voice on Facebook or YouTube, is this a safe type of password?
No.
No, I
it
agree.
Just isn't.
Yeah,
it isn't. I mean, the fact is, it is very easy for you going to 11 Labs or any of the other sites out there. You can, if you have access to somebody's voice, you can very easily spoof this. So I think this is a really great idea that came out a couple years ago. Oh, we're going to use voice ID, but AI has caught up and surpassed what we thought was possible. Mm-hmm. I do not, under any circumstances, consider voice ID to be authentic. In fact, what we are telling people in our high-stakes stakeholders is you cannot trust somebody who calls you on the phone and says, hi, I'm the president of the university, or hi, I'm Patrick Crispin, or hi, I'm the CIO. I need you to do this. You have a secret word or secret phrase that you don't write down that you require the person who's impersonating the other person to say, and they don't know it. It's the shibboleth for them. And you know immediately, okay, well, I'm sorry, you didn't know our secret word or secret phrase. Christine and I have one mm-hmm. where we set one where if I call up Christine and say, hey, Christine, I need you to get into our bank and transfer some money to this, right. you know, to this crypto thing. Christine's going to sit there and say, okay, well, what's our secret phrase? Mm-hmm. And she knows our secret phrase and same thing. It's like, no, yep. you cannot trust this anymore.
Because Patrick proved very early in this whole it was over like a year ago with this whole AI scenario. Patrick said, this is going to be huge. For example, and there was Steve rapping about loving gluten.
Yeah.
And there I was singing. What song was I singing, Patrick?
I think you were doing Rapper's Delight.
I was, yes. And it was my voice.
And my favorite is Johnny Cash singing I'm a Barbie Girl.
Yes. I mean, it's spooky how good it is. I'm to the point now when I pick up the phone and somebody asks me a question and the word yes is my answer, I just go, correct, because I'm afraid to say the word yes. Which is crazy because they could use the word correct, too, in some nefarious way.
There's a bunch of things we want to get to, but I'm going to completely segue away from tech stuff for a second because people are always interested in how Joseph is doing. And I want to issue a public round of applause for Joseph. You want to explain the grade that Joseph got this week? And it was so cool.
Joseph has had some problems with math, and we've put him into tutoring, and he's been working really, really hard, and something this year clicked. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say he actually got, on a 50-question exam, a 50 out of 50. He aced it.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I still get goosebumps when you tell me that, because that was so huge for his self-confidence.
And Christine sent us a picture of this of the grade. He got an A on it, and that is huge.
The boy is...
And one of the things...
He's mathing.
We told him, look, it's not the grade we're celebrating, it's the effort. And we really, really, really appreciate the hard work that he's put in over the summer. Because he's been going to tutoring, you know, twice a week, you know, all summer while everybody else was, you know, playing, he was going to tutoring. In fact, he was in tutoring today. And we, you know, he doesn't like it. He'd much rather be home playing on his Oculus, but.
But now you might tell him not to feel any pressure, but because he's getting so good, we are going to ask him to do our taxes.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Johnny and I were very interested, and we sent Patrick some information about a story that we heard about a different piece of spyware that is reportedly going to be used by ICE. It's called Graphite. Patrick, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, this is not facial recognition. We've seen that before, and it's not really an iPhone unlocker. This is actually a tool called Graphite, and it's an Israeli-made zero-click spyware. Let me unpack what that means. Zero-click means it can be installed without you doing anything. It can be installed without even having access to your phone physically. It could be done remotely. And it's zero-click spyware that can silently hack into phones, bypass encryption, and listen in real time. The contract that ICE had to use graphite was first signed under the Biden administration in 2024, paused over some compliance concerns, and that pause has been lifted. So why does this matter? Well, a couple things come to mind. One is graphite wasn't developed in the U.S. It's an Israeli software program. Mm-hmm. And because this is foreign technology, we need to kind of see how it's been used in other countries. And we've seen it been used in about a dozen other countries, and it's been misused. There was a story in Italy where it was used to track journalists. So this is raising not only privacy concerns, like getting access to, let's be honest, what's on our phone is the most intimate parts of our digital lives. And it could also pose a national security risk because we're not the only country that has this tool. If other countries are using graphite, other countries could then say, oh, the United States is spying on us, or, oh, I'm going to counter it, or, oh, I'm going to use it in nefarious ways against America. So think of this sort of less like an app that you or ICE installs, and it's kind of more like an invisible wiretap yep. on your entire phone. And the capabilities of this are vastly beyond anything that you see in courtroom forensics. If you're concerned about this, I'm not necessarily sure you should be, but if you are concerned about it, what can you do? Well, with tools like Pegasus and now Graphite, they usually rely on exploiting unpatched flaws in your phone. So if you keep your phone updated, if you're constantly updating your phone to the latest versions, that closes most of those holes. The other one, and this is sort of controversial, we're all used to unlocking our phones with our face IDs or fingerprints in the older phones. Mm-hmm. It turns out password identification numbers, the PINs, the numbers are actually better because your face could be coerced. Hmm. Somebody could take your phone and say, okay, I'm going to hold your phone up to your face and aha, you've given me permission to get in. With a PIN, it's much more difficult for somebody to get in if they don't know that number. Mm-hmm. You could also consider rebooting your phone every day because a lot of these spyware tools will reside on your phone for as long as your phone is on until your phone restarts. So when you restart, the spyware needs to be reinstalled. My thing is really honestly, just know your security risk level. If you're a regular listener, and honestly, I think it's almost all of us, we're not going to be targeted by ICE. The people that you need to be worried for are journalists, activists, immigrants, and basically anybody that ICE is looking on. You also really, if you want to do something, might want to talk to your elected officials and kind of say, hey, have you checked this mm-hmm. tool and see if it's actually on the up and up? And I'm not sure I'm comfortable having foreign spyware being used by the country. And there are civil liberty unions and groups like the EFF, ACLU, Access Now. They're already voicing concerns. But for most people, it's not something you need to panic about. But it could be a real risk for you if you're a journalist. Mm-hmm. Safeguard, as I wrote in the show notes, it's not technical, it's political. It's about pushing for oversight and accountability, particularly with these really, really powerful surveillance tools that are now crossing into everyday life. And it's a concern.
And isn't one of the most important takeaways for everybody, regardless of whether you're in the media or not, how many of us actually reboot our phones regularly?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
very few.
I think it is a wonderful idea. Once in a 24-hour period, reboot your phone. There's no downside to that.
It actually could make your phone go a little faster.
Yeah. I would like to talk to my elected officials and say, so, let's talk about graphite. What do you know about it?
And
to find out if they really know what it is.
I would be
willing
to bet.
What they would tell you is it's what's in a pencil.
Yes.
That's kind of where I was going. I would be willing to bet that 90% of our elected officials have no clue about graphite.
No. Sadly. No. That's what scares me, too. I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll do that.
But again, this is nothing new because as we talked years ago with Patrick and the other members of the Cyber Squad, the technical expertise in Washington is so bad. It's just...
And they're making decisions on that very subject. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of bad, shall we continue with the bad?
Sure.
We talked not too long ago about national public data.
Yeah, not a government agency.
It sounds so official, though.
It really does. National public data. But it's just basically another one of the millions of data brokers out there. It was actually founded by a Florida sheriff who operated a movie studio. and the
what?
National public data, we talked about it the last time we were a while ago, back in August. And the reason why we talked about it is it had craptacularly bad security, like such terrible security. Hackers broke in and stole in nearly 2.9 billion records. 2.9 billion records, including 272 million unique social security numbers. It was just terrible. So they went offline for a while. They're back. This time they have a new owner, something called Perfect Privacy LLC, which is a company that sells anonymous domain registrations. And their website is live again. And the amount of data they have and they're making available to the public is, well, it's concerning. Even if the data comes from public sources, my recommendation is if you value your privacy, go to nationalpublicdata.com. Do this when you get a chance. Go to nationalpublicdata.com, search using your name and your city, absolutely free of charge, and you'll find a profile. If you view, if there is one, click on the View Profile button and copy the full and basically when you click on the View full profile, it's going to show you information about you. It's like, oh, this is every address I've ever lived at. This is, oh my God, it's my telephone number. Oh my God, it's every email address. Again, this is public information out there. There is an opt-out process for you. I recommend you opt out. I put the information in the show notes. But the bigger problem is anybody can create a data broker business and there's no requirements. This company's secure the personal data, and until the Congress steps in, and they're not going to step in, you are going to have to play whack-a-mole with your data. And this is a company that has history of really bad data security. At least at National Public Data, you want to view your profile and then go through the opt-out form and just say, hide my information. The information it has for a couple people I checked, it's like, oh, wow, that's a lot of information. And yeah, no.
You just used a word that I'm going to start using because there's so many reasons to use the word craptastic and craptacular.
It's just, oh, it's horrible.
Also, we should maybe, again, quickly explain, when you talk about rebooting your phone, that just, you turn it on, turn it off, turn it back on.
So restart your device, reboot your phone. It's that simple, right, Patrick?
That's all it is.
And Patrick, is that a good idea, not just for your phones, but for your desktop, laptop, whatever?
Yeah, I actually do it on my desktops once a week. I usually start the week just saying, okay, I'm going to kind of flush the deck and start over.
Okay. We mentioned that we wanted to talk about something called, and how do you pronounce it, Incogni?
Incogni. National Public Data really is just one of hundreds of data brokers. So you remove yourself from National Public Data, you haven't removed yourself from the internet.
Right.
There are a handful of companies out there that are selling subscription-based data removal services. One of them, a very popular one, is called Incogni, I-N-C-O-G-N-I. And if you spent any time on YouTube or listen to podcasts, you've probably heard of Incogni a lot because Incogni is aggressively sponsoring creators. You'll hear ads for Incogni everywhere. by the way, it's the same playbook that you see to promote VPNs, antivirus tools like NordVPN, Surfshark, ExpressVPN. By the way, Surfshark actually created Incogni. Sponsorship doesn't actually mean that the service doesn't work, but that does mean you should take it with a grain of salt and kind of lean on some independent reviews other than just the influencers. There are competitors out there to Incogni. Delete Me is a good one, or Optory. But if you're interested in Incogni, for about $8 a month if you pay annually, and $15 a month if you want to pay for the ultimate, $8 a month, you get to remove your data from about 420 data brokers. So we talked about national public data. That's just one of them. Pay $8, you can remove your information from 420 data brokers. Bump it up to about $15 a month for the unlimited plan, and they go to about 1,000 different sites. And both promise that they're going to keep watching even after they've done the initial remove. Question, million-dollar question, or as I put in the notes, the Powerball question. Mm-hmm. Do these services work? And the answer is kinda.
Yeah.
There's an academic study that actually looked at how well these services worked, and they found that they removed about 40% of identified records, and only 41% of those were actually personal identifiable information tied to the users. In other words, they work kind of, but not 100%. And they only really scrub basic identifiers like your email, like your address, like your telephone number, not reviews, not mugshots, not reputation related content. The example I put in the show notes are, if you're a Phillies fan and you stole a baseball from a kid at a Marlins game,
yeah,
there is no way Incogni or any other company is going to disappear that. That ain't going away.
That's right. And it shouldn't either.
And for those of you, if you don't know what we're talking about, look it up. This woman Phillies deserves Karen. All of the attention she can possibly get.
And there is no way you're removing that from the internet.
No.
So,
no.
But a tool like Incogni, it's going to make some of your information vanish from the data broker sites. It's not going to make you hidden. You can't vanish, but they do cut about 50% of the chunk about what's known about you from these data brokers.
Okay. A listener has a kind of an interesting question. If you apply for a job and they're doing a search of who you are, and they find very little information about you on the internet.
Do they think that you now have a phony ID because there's nothing about Johnny on the
internet? That's their question. Is that hurting you ultimately if there's not information out there about you? But you said a lot of the good stuff is still out there, like your mugshots and your reputation-related content.
And all those cat pictures you posted.
Yes.
And employers usually do actual background checks and don't actually go to these websites, these data brokers. They'll actually go to your credit bureau or your credit agency and get the information from that. The information that's available in your credit file is amazing detailed in what they know about you. So they'll actually do a data background check on that.
So if you were one of the girls gone wild, and in fact that video's out there, and you're now a lawyer, it's still out there.
Yeah.
It's still out there. It's not going away.
No.
But if you don't want your email address out there, or the addresses of all the places you used to live, or all your telephone numbers that you've ever had, you can remove that. Maybe, sort of.
Yeah, but I don't think I want to pay $15 a month for the ultimate coverage.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, before we wrap up, we should get to This Week in Hacks.
Real quick, I want to talk about one that doesn't impact us, because we've talked about things that impacted us. Hertz, Dollar, Thrifty, Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, blah, blah, blah. I want to talk about one that doesn't involve you and doesn't technically involve your phone, your laptop, or any device of your own. But it's a story that you're not going to see anywhere else. Nobody's really talking about it. There's a company called Copeland. And Copeland makes the heating, cooling, and industrial technology used in the refrigerators found in about two-thirds of grocery stores in North America. So that includes Kroger's. That includes Mariano's, Food for Less, and out here, Ralph's. It includes Albertson. So that includes Jewel-Osco, Safeway, Whole Foods. Basically, if you are a grocer and you have refrigerator freezers, you're using Copeland controls in it. A company called Armis Labs discovered about 10 vulnerabilities in Copeland controllers that could allow threat actors to manipulate temperatures and spoil food and medicine at the retail and distribution level. So one issue was one of the controllers had a default administrative account one day with a predictable date-based password. Another one would actually let the bad guys download all usernames and passwords. These vulnerabilities have been called Frostbite 10 because, you know, it's refrigerator. Only affect Copeland E2 and E3 controllers, but those are, again, in like two-thirds of the grocery stores that are out there. Why does it matter to us? Why are we talking about it? Well, think about it. If the refrigerator at the store goes down, it could spoil food. Food becomes unsafe. Medicines that have to be frozen might not, or vaccines or perishables. This is really bad. And while there isn't any example of this being exploited yet, these controls out there could be used for espionage, sabotage, or ransomware. So if you're in retail, you or retailers already know about this, you got to patch your Copeland EC2 and EC3 controllers. Phase out the E2 hardware that's already end of life. Lock down your operation technology networks, and then basically audit and be ready for targeted attacks that are going after your freezers.
Wow.
But just as software vulnerabilities expose your computer, this shows how industrial tech is just as risky.
That is just crazy that someone would do that and... I shouldn't be surprised.
Going after the freezers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frostbite with a Y. So if you want to read more about it, it's Frostbite with a Y.
And sometimes it's just someone trying to figure out, can I do this?
Some malicious. Yeah. I want to say 16-year-old, but that's being unfair to 16-year-olds. They're busy having fun gaming. Speaking of that, a listener wanted to know if you have an opinion. They just got a mini Mac, and they enjoy watching videos on whatever monitor you would recommend. Is there a TV or monitor that would give them gorgeous images, in your opinion?
Yeah, actually, if you're looking for just a basic entry-level 27-inch monitor, I kind of agree with Wirecutter on this. Asus makes the ProArt display. They're about $375. You can get those pretty much anywhere. If you want to go up from that and actually get 4K and do that, I'm not sure you're going to need that. But if you want to, anything in the Dell UltraSharp line is really, really good. Again, I very strongly recommend going to wirecutter.com. It's part of the New York Times, and they do some great reviews, and I agree with all of their recommended products. These are just spot on.
By the way, speaking of monitors, I read a thing earlier this week that in our future is probably going to be like an IMAX 3D monitor. Those things are kind of in development now. So we will wind up seeing them in our living rooms in the probably over the next decade at some point.
I would find out if that's going to be real or not. I'm not sure people want that. I mean, we tried it, 3D 10, 15 years ago, and nobody wanted it.
No.
This was a CNET story that I saw earlier this week, and they were saying, it's not here now, but it's in the pipeline being worked on.
That gives me a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's too much.
No. Yeah.
All right. Patrick's show notes will be available on our blog and our Facebook page and all the ships at sea, and he joins us twice a month, and thanks a million, Patrick.
And people should follow you on Blue Sky?
Yeah, just look for Patrick Crispin on Blue Sky.
All right. Thanks a million. Have a great week.
Thanks.
Oh, and happy birthday. Early birthday.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And to you, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We've got a bunch coming up. Sports Between the Sheets is somewhere between the sheets and around the corner. I want to start off with, I know there are tons of other things to deal with, and I know the Sox lost tonight, but hey, six wins in a row, and they beat Detroit in the first game out of the box. And I'm just loving the Sox right now.
Some excellent baseball. Would you agree, Gabe?
Definitely. Yeah, that six-game winning streak, that's a season high for them this year, if I'm not mistaken.
And, yeah.
Again, this goes back to what we've been talking about over these last couple of months, certainly since the All-Star break, the progress that they've shown.
Have you seen the comparison of the Sox statistics pre and post All-Star game?
It's like two different teams.
Exactly.
Crazy.
I have not looked at them in a while, but I can only imagine. I mean, you take a look at what they've done. You know, their pitching has gotten better. The offense has certainly gotten better. Some of their scoring outputs in these games has just been something that we definitely were not expecting in April and May. And again, it's all trending in the right direction. Again, not sure if this will, get the team back to the postseason anytime soon. Certainly, obviously not this year, but, next year is probably still a little out of the question. But again, it's all about, building that progress and building that momentum and, getting all the pieces in place and, just putting a stamp on this team with the current core that you have. And
one of the stamps that you're putting is Colson Montgomery.
Right.
Woo. Hello.
Right. So, you're hoping that this all comes together and then gets this team back to the promised land. And, Colson Montgomery, he started the year in AAA, and I was actually reading the other day that he wasn't swinging the bat very well down there at the start of the year, mm-hmm. and he just slowly started progressing, and he's just been on a tear these last few weeks, so that certainly has helped.
And in fact, he is tied in the American League for the most home runs since the All-Star game, which is really impressive. I mean, he was on fire the other night. It was really exciting to watch, and we record the games now, so we'll go home. I'm sorry they were shut out on Saturday, but still it's worth watching just to see how they're performing. All right, speaking of performing, I know you're tickled because the Bears' opening game is on an evening, a Monday night. You're going to be home. You're going to be rested. You're going to get to see it, right, Gabe?
I may be rested, but I'm sure at some point I'll start yelling at the TV and drive my wife crazy. the key for this game, first and foremost, is who's going to be healthy enough to play. The injury report is small, but Jalen Johnson's listed as questionable because he's been limited in practice. He was hurt all training camp. He got hurt during off-season training. He's still recovering, and I think he's recovered from the injury, but I think it's a matter of his conditioning. Is he have the conditioning to go out there and take the field for four quarters? And TJ Edwards is listed as doubtful. He hasn't practiced all week. His hamstring's been bugging him. Running back Roschon Johnson's been dealing with a foot injury. He's questionable. Mm. So, it's all about who's going to be healthy enough to play. But aside from that, obviously we're looking for how Caleb Williams shows his improvement fundamentally, of course, mm-hmm. especially going up against a very aggressive Vikings defense that likes to blitz early and often. They're going to test Caleb Williams. They're going to test the offensive line. And in this first game of the season, we're going to see what improvements, if any, this Bears offense has made. Defensively, they're going to be going up against J.J. McCarthy, Chicago area native. Missed off last season because he got hurt in preseason, hurt his knee, ended up having season-ending surgery. So this is technically a redo for his rookie season because he didn't play last year. So the Bears are going to be looking to take advantage of any mistakes that he may make because he's still technically learning on the job. So it'll certainly be a close game. I hope the Bears win. I'm not going to pick a winner because I got burned on this too many times last season, but I definitely think that it definitely won't be decided by more than a field goal.
I don't expect you to have an answer to this, but one of the things that I always think, anytime any team goes on Monday Night Football, that is such a spotlight. Do you think it adds a little degree of additional pressure to both teams?
No question, because the whole country's watching it. It's more than just the fans that pay tickets to the stadium. You're all over national TV. The whole country sees it at the same time. It's not a Sunday regional broadcast. And, not only, people are watching it, but it's also going to be trending on social media. Monday Night Football always trends on social media. So there's going to be a lot of eyes on this game. And, however it ends, it's definitely going to be the talk, certainly come late Monday night, early Tuesday morning. So, there's always that pressure, whether it's Monday night, Sunday night, Thursday night, you have that national exposure, the whole country's watching.
Mm-hmm. They do have an interesting schedule because the next game is a day game on a Sunday. And then, they got a couple Sundays, but they've got 3:25 games on week 3 and 4. And then they've got a bye week on week 5. And then week 6, which takes us into October, they're back to Monday Night Football. So It's kind of a really interesting schedule. It's a schedule made for Gabe so he can catch the games.
not just that, but as we talked about during the offseason, it's also going to be a difficult schedule.
Yeah.
When you look at who's lined up on that schedule, especially with some of those road games. So, you know, Ben Johnson, his coaching acumen is going to be tested for sure.
I want to, just for a second, I want to bring Sammy in here because Sammy is playing the part of Julian tonight. And we were talking earlier that Sammy is in the sports mode. And what are you going to be looking for on the Bears, Sammy?
I mean, anything could happen. It's Monday night, big spotlight tail off of Gabe. I think that the best sporting events in Chicago is a Monday night football game at Soldier Field. For J.J. McCarthy to open his career under the lights, the national spotlight, I think the pressure might get to him. So I think the crowd, get them electrified. I think the Bears pull it out.
And the weather's going to be perfect. This is going to be a really, really good night. If you've got tickets, you're very, very lucky. It's going to be in the 60s. And
also, as we were saying earlier, even if you are not a football fan, Hamp and OB.
Hamp and OB. Yes. Gabe, before we let you get back to your news mode, didn't you just celebrate an anniversary here? 5 years?
That was on September 2nd, yes.
Yes. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot older in that time, that's for sure.
Well, you've also gotten thinner, too, in that time.
Yeah, that's the plus side, although another negative, I wear glasses now. Not used to that.
Happened in 5 years?
So that started in June.
Uh-huh.
And I've never needed them before, and, you know, one day I just couldn't see as well as I used to, so I guess that's the trade-off, the good with the bad, but very thankful for the time I've spent here, and I enjoy it, especially since I get to be on the air with you two every week. I mean, come on, who gets to say, every week I'm on the air with Steve and Johnny, how many people can say that?
I think your glasses are kind of cool. I like the frames you got.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a good look.
Funny story about that. So my wife and my nieces helped me pick those out. So again, I've never done this before, and this was all new to me. I quickly realized that buying glasses is not at all like buying clothes or shoes. It's more like buying a car because you gotta, you know, like
you every intricate take detail. Take them for a test drive?
Yes, every intricate detail has to be picked correctly. So, long story short, we found a place that I wanted to, you know, look at the glasses they had. I walk into the store, and right off the bat, I see glasses branded Nike and Oakley. I'm like, yes, those are the ones that I want.
Oh.
Here's the problem. None of their frames were big enough to completely cover my eyes, so it wouldn't have done me any good.
Oh, so they were like cool, smaller glasses?
Right.
More for the coolness factor than actually to be able to see.
Or at least for someone who doesn't have as big of a head as I do. So when that happened, I was like, because I was trying them on, and my wife's like, yeah, those aren't going to cover your eyes. You can't see real. And I'm like, yeah, because I was like half blurry and half, you know, seeing clearly because the frames were so small over my eyes. So what my wife ended up doing is we picked out a few other pairs, and then she FaceTimed my nieces, and they ultimately picked the glasses for me.
See, so, I can so relate. Because
you did that.
The last time that I got the frames that I'm wearing right now, for whatever reason, Johnny was at home. I think you were cooking something and you couldn't leave. So I went to the store by myself. But as I'm there, I kind of narrowed it down to about two different frames, and I was FaceTiming with Johnny and sending her pictures of both frames
if you can't see well, it's so hard to put on a frame without your prescription and move in real close and try to get a sense of what does that look like on you. So you need another pair of eyes to tell you that your head is just too big for those glasses.
Yeah, certainly was a wake-up call. So,
cause like I said, relate, Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, I figured, oh, you know, it's just like going to get a pair of shoes or some clothes. I just pick out some glasses and call it a day. And no, it was a lot more complicated than I thought.
I'd like to suggest they have a segment called the Big Head Segment for those of us who need a little bit more.
The section in the
a little more real estate, you know, so that we can actually see out of the glasses. Well, Gabe, go back, put your news hat on, and thank you for this.
Put your news glasses on.
Yes, for Sports Between the Sheets with Gabe.
We should mention that next week,
yep,
we have a full show, but we're not going to be here for
it. Nope.
It will be a, quote, best of, assuming there is any such thing of us.
Stop.
Because next week, we're going to be out in Joliet at the Rialto Square Theater on next Sunday night. We're going to be inducting Susie Boggess into the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be part of a humongous show.
So why do we have to have Saturday off? Well, we typically get out of here and home between 3 and 4 in the morning. We have to be out in Joliet at 3 in the afternoon. And this is an amazing lineup. Starts at 5:30. Susie Boggess will be there. She will be performing. We will be inducting her. I am tickled. We get to see her. We get to hang out with her backstage. You guys get to see her. She is just amazing. I'm so happy for her, too. She's still saying, but I'm kind of considered a country singer. Well, the museum is recognizing rock, heavy metal, country, blues, you name it, music from Illinois. It qualifies. And so you've got a lineup for next Sunday's concert. And by the way, they're just a sprinkling of seats on the main floor.
Yeah.
There are some seats available in the balcony. Not a bad seat in the house, at least from our experience at the Rialto Square Theater. So if you want to come, come on out, even if you're sitting in the balcony. You'll see Susie Boggess, and she's going to have her band there, and she's going to be performing. Richard Marx, he's going to Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter. Richard Marx will be inducted. He will be performing.
The Shy Lights are going to be inducted.
With our buddy Marshall Thompson, who's there. I mentioned heavy metal. Grammy-nominated heavy metal band Disturbed will be in the house. Billy Branch, Chicago blues legend, will also be performing. He's doing a live tribute to the revolutionary Chicago blues musician, singer, songwriter Little Walter, who will be inducted into the museum. Also, there's going to be a very special tribute to Steve Goodman, and Bonnie Kolak is going to be on hand, folk singer. As I said, every kind of music is recognized and acknowledged and honored at this concert. So Bonnie Kolak, who's just an amazing Chicagoland folk singer, songwriter, there's going to be the tribute to Steve Goodman. And there's going to be a real special presentation for the Steve Goodman family. And the song Go Cubs Go plays a very important part in that part of the show. Speaking of the Cubs and the show, our own Bob Surratt's going to be emceeing the show. So we will be there. Bob will be there. WCFL Radio is going to be recognized with their history here in Chicago. Bob Stroud, VJ Records, also recognized. So we're probably going to be there till very late on Sunday night.
Yeah, in fact, we're not sure if we're going to be back here the following week.
Really?
Because it's going to be such a long show.
It's amazing the lineup they have going on here. Nominations for the class of 25 are in. They're tabulating the results to be included on the ballot for the 25 inductees. I believe next Saturday night, if you missed it, you will hear a replay of the interview that we did with Ron Romero. He's the guy behind the whole museum.
And I think you will also hear a replay of our last conversation with Susie Boggess.
Right, where she was kind of having a pinch me moment. Like,
Again,
it's me. I'm from Oledo, Illinois. I'm a country singer. No, she's so much more than a country singer. She's just a great singer.
There are not a lot of seats still available, but there are some seats available. And you can go to roadtorock.org, and you will get all the information. You can click on the information about the Hall of Fame and the new class for the Hall of Fame inductions, and you will find out how to get tickets.
And we should mention that the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum on Route 66 is a 501c3 charitable organization. So contributions are tax deductible for income, gift, and estate taxes. So check with your tax person if you buy a bunch of tickets to the show or if you support the museum in any way, shape, or form.
And also, earlier tonight we were talking about the Uptown Theater being one of the classic theaters in the Midwest. The Rialto Square Theater in Joliet is also one of those vintage wonderful theaters, great acoustics, great sight lines.
We've seen some amazing shows there. The Everly Brothers were just so good. And as you say, the acoustics were unbelievable, in our opinion.
And we saw an evening with Cary Grant. Well, also, it was just the, was it the 25-year anniversary of the Plainfield tornado?
Oh, it was just last week.
And the concert we all did at the Rialto Square Theater to raise money for the victims of the Plainfield tornado aid.
Yes, the concert that sold out literally in an hour. Mm-hmm. Every seat sold out, and that was a night to remember. The concert that we did at the Rialto Square was a little bit later on in September. In fact, when we come up on that date, that anniversary date, we'll have to post the video of our performance.
Yeah.
And when I burned the accordion on the stage.
Yes.
So it'll be good to be back on that stage after I burned my accordion there. So again, if you just like good music, Susie Boggess, Bonnie Kolak, The Shy Lights, Richard Marx, Disturbed, the Smashing Pumpkins will be recognized. Bo Diddley will be recognized.
Howlin' Wolf, Little Water, Little Walter, VJ Records.
Willie Dixon. I mean, this is going to be an incredible night starting at 5:30 on Sunday night, September 14th, the Rialto Square Theater. Go to roadtorock.org and you can grab your tickets.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun night.
Oh, it actually says it starts at 5 o'clock.
Okay, so earlier than we thought.
No.
Okay. Mitch Michaels is going to... Delmark Records. Yes.
Oh, good.
I keep looking at the things that are going to go on. There is not going to be enough time in the next month to do all the things that are going to happen on this show.
These people are performing, too. Okay, we won't talk long when we're there. We'll just say, here's Susie. Go.
Hi, here.
Congratulations.
Let's turn our attention to sad news this past week that Mark Bowman, one of the co-founders of the Turtles, passed away at 78 years old.
Of a brief, unexpected illness.
Yeah.
And he passed away yesterday, Friday, the 5th, in Nashville, Tennessee. And there's been no other information other than brief, unexpected illness. He was the Flo of Flo and Eddie as well.
Right. Now, he had been dealing with some serious problems. He was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia in 2020.
Oh, that's right.
But he continued to perform through the early stages of his illness. And in 2023, he revealed his diagnosis and the same year published his memoir, Happy Forever, My Musical Adventures with the Turtles, Frank Zappa, T-Rex, Flo and Eddie, and more.
Mm-hmm. Jim Peterick, our buddy, the founding member and lead singer of the Ides of March, had a great post on his page today. He said, Mark Volman had to be the class clown in high school. One afternoon, April 9th, 1968, I donned my new peacoat hoodie and drove my 64 Plymouth Valiant over to Riverside Brookfield High School to see my favorite band, The Turtles. As I stood in line for entry, four girls came in line beside me. One was cuter than the next, but one stood out above the rest. Big blue eyes, a shy smile, white blouse, orange culottes, knee socks, and saddle shoes. He remembered every detail. Mm-hmm. I said to myself, this girl is way too cute to talk to me. And she turned to me and said, are you Peterick? I said to myself, there is a God. Turns out she had seen my band, the Ides of March, play at Morton West on a bill with the New Colony 6, and her name was Karen. We started talking and never stopped. The Turtles put on a fabulous show as we sat together in rapt attention with her other cute Catholic school cuties. Howard Kylan and Mark Volman and the amazing Johnny Barbata on drums were cranking out hit after hit from the recent run of Top Tens. You Baby, It Ain't Me Babe, then the number one that was currently number one and my favorite, Happy Together. When they got to the second verse, Karen put her leg over mine. One of Karen's pals exclaimed, Karen, and she replied, it's okay, I trust him, and she could. Now, 57 years from that day, Karen Peterick and I are still happy together thanks to the great music, stage comedy, and the wit and the talent and the soul of Mark Volman. Jim writes, a few years ago, I was in Nashville doing a one-man show about my career for the National Academy of Songwriters. When I got to the part of how I met Karen at a Turtles concert and I fell in love, I heard a voice from the audience scream, "Don't blame me!" And it was Mark Volman. I had to stop my show. I was laughing so hard. The frizzy-haired class clown, the wit and soul of the Turtles, is gone, but will never be forgotten. Rock and peace, my hero. Signed, Jim. And he's told that story many times of how he met Karen.
And for anybody who doesn't know, Karen is the girl that Jim wrote Vehicle about.
Yeah. What a great story.
And they are a terrific couple.
Wow, they're amazing. And I just love that idea that Volman's in the audience, don't blame me.
Yeah.
And Jim finally gets to meet him after all those years.
By the way, a piece of unfinished business. If you look at the pictures that Johnny posted, you can go to our Facebook page and see the pictures that Johnny posted of our drive-in.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one picture that Johnny posted as we were driving on Lakeshore Drive, and we couldn't figure out what the green lights are for.
Yeah.
And we still haven't had any answers to why were the green lights on the top of one of the buildings as we were driving in
tonight.
Because
those lights typically are an indication of something going on in the city. Pink in October for breast cancer awareness, red, white, and blue for the 4th of July. They even did red, white, and blue for Labor Day, Memorial Day. So there's always a reason why they've done this. But it's not St. Patrick's Day. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with the Bears game.
Yeah.
It's like, really? The green lights.
It's not like 6 months to St. Patrick's Day or
what? Oh. You might be onto something there.
No, that's not.
Well, you could be. Oh. I don't know.
Okay.
I do have to correct something. I said instead of Broadway.
I think you got Braidway.
Braidway, well. You can't get everything just right. Come on. But as I posted, for anybody who lives on the north side and you've just hated the construction on Hollywood at Clark.
I don't know that I've hated the construction as much as I have some of the crazy drivers who are trying to get around some of the barricades and just people driving crazy.
But the barricades are gone now, so we were able to get back to our usual route, traveling Hollywood / Ridge over to Bryn Mawr and Lakeshore Drive. So,
and you were able to photograph some of your favorite buildings again.
Yes. I know that's weird, but I have a favorite building because the front of it is round and all their living rooms in this three-story building are round. And I want to know how you put your furniture in a living room where it's round. Because if you put your couch there, then you got all that wasted space behind it. And where do you put your TV? And I want somebody in that building to invite me over so I can come in and see how you've arranged your furniture. Yes, it's important to me.
When we first got married, we lived in a building that had a kind of a rounded window.
Oh, it had a bay window. Yes.
Yeah.
Which was nice because it was straight. So three-sided. You had the big picture window, then the two windows on the side. So we had a little sitting area there, and it was a great place for plants.
For those of you on the north side, it was on Pratt, just off Ridge on the north side.
Yes.
I think they still have our nice wood blinds.
And our air conditioner.
And our
window air conditioner.
That we were always told that we were going to be paid for after we moved, and that never happened.
Yes.
But we should remind you, if you would want to check out our blog, it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And again, we would like you to subscribe. There's no fee, and we don't spam you. You just get an email when we do a new blog post, and we put a lot of stuff on our blog, some stuff that doesn't find its way to some other social media places too. So and also, when you get to our blog, look through, because our blog has been up there for, let me see, how many years? Well, it's been a bunch of years. And look down at all the categories, and we've got post that we did about some of the people that we've worked with, about some of the artists who've performed on the show. Just scroll down and you can see tons and tons and tons of posts that we've been putting up there.
Recipes, too.
Yes.
And this is the time of the year. In fact, somebody asked me on our Facebook page in a message if I could share the recipe for apple butter, because we're moving into that season. Even though we're going to have some 80-degree weather later on this week, it feels like fall, and people are going to the pumpkin farms and apple picking. And yes, if you want to just go to our blog, you can just type in apple butter, and the recipe with the step-by-step and pictures and all that good stuff will be right there for you. All you need is 6 pounds of apples. I know it sounds like a lot, but it's really not. It's a lot of peeling, but oh, it's a lot of goodness when it's 12 hours it cooks in your crock pot all night
and
long.
The best smell in the world is about 3 a.m. Sometimes I'll wake up or I'll still be awake and the smell of apple butter cooking in the crock pot. It is so good.
Let me recommend, if you make apple butter from that recipe, and it's the best I've found so far, do it at night. So it's just simmering for 12 hours, and it is
so good.
It is the best. You got your cloves and your nutmeg and your cinnamon and all that goodness in that crock. I want to go, you know what? It's time to eat. We're going home to dinner.
Well, also, the blue light is starting to flash. And what's that I hear in the distance? Am I hearing?
The Zamboni.
Yep.
Adam's driving the Zamboni tonight. Clean in the studio.
Yeah.
Adam Phillips is here.
Yes.
Filling in for Big Plug Bob.
Yep.
Can I just quickly say, in case Big Plug... Yeah. Run over my feet, will you, Adam?
Well, Adam likes to rev the motor.
Big Plug Bob.
Yes.
God bless him. He left a birthday present for me. For those of you who listen regularly, you know I was bemoaning the fact that there were certain things that I would really love to get my hands on again, like Beeman's gum and clove gum and tea berry. And Bob, for my birthday, he left me a pack of all of the above.
That Zamboni's getting close.
I know.
Speaking of presents, we didn't post.
Yes.
We have to post the picture of the goat.
Yes, the goat that Beverly Goodall of Highwood, Illinois, adopted a goat at Jerry's Flowers goat adoption location up in Door County, Wisconsin. She adopted Sunshine, and we have the certificate right here. And then we were given a goat that is made out of old washing machine material. It's just the sweetest thing. And Beverly, I can't thank you enough. No one has ever given us a goat or adopted a goat in our name. So thank you.
Thank you. So we will post a picture on our various social media pages.
Yes, yes.
That Zamboni is getting close. and that means we got to get out of here. If you would like to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. And as long as you haven't won anything from this year radio place in the last 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first, you can win some goodies from our prize closet. So 312-981-7200. And you don't have to have anything pithy to say. Although if you want to just pronounce pithy proclamations, you could do that.
You could do that. If you want to talk about the Bears, you can do that. If you want to talk about the White Sox, if you want to talk about the weather, we would love to make you the cherry on top of tonight's short and show. Thanks.
So feel no pressure.
No. Okay, so we got a bank of phone calls here. That's how it works. We choose a line randomly to make it fair. And since Sammy is here for the first time tonight, Sammy, you told us you were going with number 3. Is that correct?
3 is my lucky number.
3 is his lucky number. So let's go with number 3.
Hi, caller number 3. You're on the air. And what?
Hello? Is this the Steve and Johnny show?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Why did you call if you didn't know it was the Steve and Johnny show? Is your world all cattywampus?
Very, very cattywampus down here in Moni, Illinois.
Hi, Julian.
Hey, Julian.
Hi, Stephen, Johnny, and Sandy. How you guys doing?
Okay. Are you lonely in Moni? Is that why you're calling?
Yeah, a little bit. I was bored. I was working on some of this audio, this lovely show.
I
figured, hey, you know.
Well, you were actually working in Moni. That's why you weren't here tonight, correct?
Correct. Doing some video work for a friend of mine out here in lovely Moni.
Mm-hmm. Did you get any good food out there at the event?
I had Culver's.
You had what? You had Culver's? They didn't have food for you? You were the photographer, videographer?
Well, you know, people are cheap all over the place, I guess.
But I love Culver's burgers.
I had their buffalo tenders with some mashed potatoes, and I dipped my tenders in the potatoes. Does that make me a weirdo?
No, not at all. There's nothing like mashed potatoes with meatloaf when you dip like little bites of meatloaf in your mashed potatoes.
Now, this is interesting.
Hmm.
Notice how the food Jones stayed at bay until Julian gets on the air, and all of a sudden a food Jones is running rampant through the studio. Hmm.
We should call it a food Julian.
A listener actually,
that's one of my favorite groups, the Foo Julians.
Foo Julians. A listener actually texted and said, so what's for dinner? they're getting hungry, too.
So, well, having Culver's Butter Burgers.
At least the weather was good for you because you were traipsing around outside, right?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I was actually sweating in my T-shirt.
Yeah, it was a really nice day. And I'm not kidding when I said we're going to have some 80-degree days. So tonight when it goes down into the 40s, enjoy it. It's like false fall. Weren't we blaming this on the hurricane a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Hurricane Aaron, right, Julian? We were talking about how this is not false fall. This is the hurricane that's causing this to happen.
But the good news is we don't have the wildfire smoke from Canada.
Yeah, that's true. There's always something to complain about, though. So are you going to
a hurricane over wildfire smoke?
Are you going to hang out in Moni for Sunday?
Yeah, I'll be here pretty much until the afternoon on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that's open to the public? Can your fans come out and see you walking around with your video camera in Moni?
Will you be signing autographs?
Probably, yeah. So actually, what I've actually been working on here is Moni's annual Fall Fest. It's basically a carnival with a live band, bunch of food, tons of food trucks, and there's a, they call it the Moni Historical Society or Center or something, and it's just everything about the history of Moni, which has been around for over 150 years, I want to say.
Wow. I had no idea. And Moni
and
is...
And tomorrow they're...
Go ahead.
Okay. Tomorrow they're dedicating they're unveiling a new statue or something. So they're going to have a bunch of trustees and the mayor and all the people that matter in this town to kind of unveil this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was telling you off the air last week that one of my favorite experiences back from my days of the Once Big 89 was a high school team of the week appearance I did at Crete Moni High School. It's just a terrific bunch of people. And a principal whose name was Russell, and he had these wonderful T-shirts, Russell's Controlled Rowdies. And it was a great experience. That's a really nice area.
And they're expanding rapidly. I was here last year for the same event, and a lot of stuff was under construction, and now everything looks shiny and clean concrete and everything. It's lovely. They got a brand new park. They just opened maybe a few months back.
Yeah, I'm showing my ignorance. I always think of like cornfields when I think of Moni. But it's been, I guess, a few decades since I've been in the Moni area, since it's all shiny and new. Well, we will not see you next week since we are going to be resting up, getting ready for this big concert on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll have some words that have been previously said.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. As Steve likes to say, they call it best of, but they're working on finding those.
Yes.
And if they can't find any best of, Julian's going to find some words that he's going to put on the radio, right?
strong language to follow. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Okay.
All right. Well, be careful. Enjoy Sunday. It's going to be a lovely day. And we'll
sit tight or hang loose, whatever works.
We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay. I'll sit loose and hang tight.
And don't be cattywampus, whatever you do.
Oh, fine.
Bye.
That's our cattywampus normal producer, or as normal as he gets.
We tease Julian. Him because that was a new word for him a couple of months ago. And so he sprinkles it into his conversation now. Last week it was Piccadillo.
I know where you almost went.
Yes.
Speaking of Julian, playing the part of Julian tonight has been Sammy. Sammy, terrific job. It's been fun working with you.
It's been a long time coming. When I first was here.
Eight years ago.
Yeah.
You were one of my first shows I got to produce, and I had a really good time and very entertained. And you guys do a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you.
And that is shown through all your hard work.
Well, the time goes.
You're reading that just like we wrote it. Thank you, Sammy.
No problem.
Time went by really, really fast. You're going to be back here on Monday for the Bears game. Is that correct?
That would be correct. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m., taking you up to kickoff, and then as soon as the game ends, we'll be on until 11:30.
So you're going to be holding the leashes on Hamp and OB?
Yes, and some blood pressure medication and the dump button as well.
Yeah, really?
Seriously, do you ever have to use the dump button? Do they ever get that carried away that you have to use the dump button on them?
I've done it a couple of times. I'm not going to say how many, but
okay.
Hopefully they dominate and they win the game.
Yes.
Cause, you know,
that'll make a big difference.
Otherwise, I'll have my hands full.
Yeah, it could get very ugly. You're right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Sammy.
Thanks for having me.
And our thanks to Adam Phillips.
Oh, and Gabe held down the newsroom tonight. No Ron. Ron cut out because there was a football game on the radio. So Gabe came in a little early and covered that end of it. And we got to see Adam.
And again, we ain't going to be here next week. Next week, previously used words.
Mm-hmm.
So we will talk to you again live in 2 weeks.
On the 20th of September, when we have Terry White in here.
Yes.
Singer-songwriter Terry White.
And don't we have Roz Varon?
We have Roz Varon coming by to
Channel 7.
Talking about a very special concert she's put together to honor her daughter.
So thank you so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it. And stay safe.
We might see you at the concert next Sunday.
We may.
Yeah.